and good Friday morning. It is September 21st. Now, there is some consternation about this. Is this the first day of fall or is tomorrow the first day of fall? Now, in the olden days, back before all the measurements and so on and so forth, September 21st was considered the fall solstice, the autumn solstice, whichever you prefer. First day of winter was December 21st. First day of spring was May 21st. Or no, wait a second. First day of spring is March 21st. First day of summer is June 21st. Now they bat it back and forth between the 21st and the 22nd. So if you watch the news, they'll tell you the first day of autumn is tomorrow. But for a long time it was today. But summer is just about over, and you're going to know that tonight because the temperatures are going to take a drastic turn. This is Over the Back Fence with Pastor Steve Whitaker and myself, Scott Spears. Pastor, here we are, I think, in autumn.
Well, I'll tell you what, my wrist joints certainly feel like it's autumn. I did a lot of construction work as a younger person, and I knew with some of the things that I overdid that it would come back to bite me one day, and I think it is autumn because it's biting me today.
Well, people, I believe tonight and this weekend, 68 degrees for a high tomorrow, are going to kick on the heat for the first time.
Yeah, some people will, I would imagine. I my wife would not let me turn it on yet. She is one that pushes it out as far as, and I don't blame her, you know. If you think about it, I wonder sometimes, I look at some of the older houses, and when people lived 150 years ago, and I see these great big old frame houses that we can't keep warm. They never had things like thermal pane windows and insulation, and they had a big potbelly stove in the, you know, in the gathering area, a smaller one maybe in the kitchen, and that was it. And they piled on blankets, and they had warmers they would put under the sheets. But, you know, think about it. They didn't have furnaces back then.
No.
It had to get cold. My dad always told me that he slept with his brother Carl, and he said, I always made sure Carl went to bed 15 minutes before me so the bed would be warm.
I understand. We had a great two-week conversation here on ethics, and I think we've done what needed to be done with that.
Oh, I think so.
So this week's topic is...
What are you doing, or are you just talking? Now, yeah. That seems pretty odd. What makes me think about this is, you know, I hear so many people many times, and they talk about how they care deeply about a certain issue. Maybe it's the poor. Maybe it's things that need to be done with different people, and this isn't fair, and that we hear that. And even in the church, we have everybody agrees that there's things that we should do. But I want to talk a little bit about the difference between those that are burdened and act versus those that are burdened and talk. And then there's a third category, and that would be the category of those that, well, actually there's four. There'll be those that just want to that want to pay for it but don't want to actively do it. And then there's those that want somebody else to do it because they're burdened about it. So it's kind of I wanted to see what category people fit in and where they're at. But, you know, there's, if you ask people, if you go on the street in general and you ask people how they feel about single moms and the plight that they go through trying to take care of kids, maybe hold a job, go to school, everyone says, oh, yeah, I just really feel for them. Well, are we putting that into action, and in what way do we put that into action? So this is kind of not a gotcha show, but kind of a, let's think of some ways that we can really put some feet to our words. Does that make sense?
Well, it does, and it's interesting because I think it comes back to that old conundrum that people have talked about for years. If a new mother steals formula for her baby, do you want to jail the mother? It's not right to steal, and it's never right, but if the baby died from malnutrition, would that be okay? That wouldn't be okay either. And it wasn't formula, but a few years ago, there was a shoplifting effort at a place I was at. Oddly enough, I was not working there at the time, but it was clear what was going on because they were dragging the lady back to wherever she was. And what she stole was lice shampoo, bottle of lice shampoo. Now, I don't think the market is high out on the street for a bottle of Lice shampoo. So clearly, that was being stolen for a need. But yet, it's stealing nonetheless, and they will tackle you, and they will pull you back, and they won't you know, do anything with you for that, because that's not above a certain amount of money. They'll warn you and don't come back to the store, and they won't let you have the Lice shampoo. But do they feel that turned out? No place to go? Because you'd have to be pretty desperate in my mind to steal Lice shampoo that you needed to get something done. And then I wondered what happened to those kids who needed the Lice shampoo.
I guess that's, you know, it's always a hard topic when we talk about the fact that we have to have laws for order. If we didn't have laws, people would just say, well, at what point is it not okay to do A, B, or C? Or at what point do we stop? And that's why we have some absolutes in our laws. But at the same time, you know, that's a situation where let's look at whatever store that was. And by the time she was caught, drugged to the back of the store, whatever they do, scolded heavily, told not to come back in the store, and told to leave without the shampoo, I would almost guess there was about 5 or 6 people involved.
Probably.
At some point that knew about it or something. And by the time those 5 or 6 knew, by the end of the day, every employee in the store knew what was going on. So here's my thing. Yeah, scold her. Tell her what she shouldn't have done. There's got to be some consequence. Don't lose a customer for good. Don't tell them never to come back in the store. Maybe say, you know, you got a 2-month ban on this store. But then somebody in that group needed to go to the register, buy the Lice shampoo, meet that lady out front and say, go take care of your children, but please don't steal again.
That person doesn't exist, though, in 2018 in a whole lot of cases. And one of the things...
That's what I want to talk about.
Yeah, well, it's interesting because what I call that is we have become a black and white society answer. You're either right or you're wrong. The area of gray that used to exist between right and wrong is no longer there.
Yeah, but Scott, here's the thing. I'm not saying that she was wrong. She did steal. I'm just saying that even though she was wrong and she was stole, she needed to be told she was wrong and that she stole. There needed to be some consequences. But then is when the empathy comes in and the compassion comes in and someone looks at the whole situation and says, ah, this is her plight. This is her burden. How can I then help?
Well, see, that's why I think that's a gray answer, because if somebody stole, let's say, a bottle of alcohol, even though, again, it doesn't meet the amount financially to press any charges, nobody's going to think about buying that alcohol and meeting you in the parking lot.
No, but here's the point. Is there somebody that finds out in that group that has enough compassion to meet that person outside and say, look, if you were stealing a bottle of alcohol, you really got a problem. Let me direct you somewhere where you can get... See, this is my whole point. It's so easy to cop out. And even many times, you know, I appreciate so much, you know, we need money in the church to do the things that we do desperately. It shouldn't be a big money maker. It shouldn't be a big career thing for the pastor. It's a calling. And we need money coming in. But at the same time, giving, unless there's a physical or a mental reason you can't do it, giving does not excuse you from loving and from touching. You understand what I mean? And it's the same way in our society. So many people will, I'll give you an example. I know a young lady that is an activist. That's what she does. I mean, that's literally what she does. But however, I've never seen any example of her going out and personally helping people or doing anything. I mean, it's so easy sometimes to be an activist on either side of, I'm not talking about the right or the left. You know, there's people that are engaged in talk. They're engaged in, you know, they'll certainly run to the polls and vote. But then say, okay, I voted my conscience. Now you guys go do it for me.
You know, it's interesting. This, not to go back to that conversation we had 3 weeks ago, but this just happened recently, and I found this fascinating. And I'm going to leave the names out of this story. Not that they would be known, but maybe they would listen. An older family, brother and a sister. Sister's a little older than the brother, but the brother is in the early stages of dementia, I would say. It's not Alzheimer's, but it's dementia. And they don't live in the same city. And the brother is now in a nursing facility because he has trouble walking after a bout of pneumonia. And the sister's very concerned about him, very concerned. She does try to get over and visit him maybe once a month or something of that nature. And every so often, he does end up in the hospital because he'll take a fall or something like that. Pneumonia will develop, and he'll be in the hospital. And the interesting thing about that, and this is where I say it kind of ties into a few weeks ago, he does not have any pension. He does not have a 401k. He doesn't have anything like that. So the reason he's in this nursing home is because he does not have anything but his Social Security. And wife is gone, and so on and so forth. So the money for Medicare and Medicaid for him that would have paid for rehabilitation on his legs, which could be done. As far as I know, there's nothing broken there, is not being done because of cuts that were made to the Medicaid and Medicare program. Now, this is why I bring back in the sister. The sister voted heavily and posts things heavily against funding those programs, but is always so upset that her brother can't spend more time in the hospital. So it never connects. There's never a connect.
I see what you're saying, and let me give you another connect, okay? And I don't want to talk about, just like you, we're not going to have a Medicare discussion.
Yeah, right.
Another discussion we're not going to have is a abortion discussion.
No.
But I will throw this out there. I'll say that, you know, I know so many people that firmly believe that you know, right to life is right to life, period. Across the board, that's it. And I'll be honest, that's where I'm at with it as a pastor. But at the same time, I have to say this, people out there, if you want all these babies to be born, someone's got to take care of them. And if you are not willing, some of you, to open your home, to open your heart, to maybe help a young mom that's scared to death because she's 17 years old, she wants to keep a baby but has no idea what to do. See, this is where the compassion's got to come in. I know a family, I just had the blessing of meeting them a few months ago. I had the honor of being officiating their daughter and her husband's wedding. I've known the kids for a while, but I hadn't known the parents. And these parents are, you know, middle-class family. They have a couple kids of their own. And they realize that something they could do was to adopt children, and some of these kids are hard to get adopted out, but they have these beautiful children in their family, and showing some racial love here. The children are African American, the family's white, and when I met this family and interacted with them, I've never seen such love and compassion between all of them. And it made me think, now here's a family that already has a couple kids, and they could say, you know, if we take on more kids, we're not going to be able to live the lifestyle that we could live. We're not going to be able to take as many vacations. We're not going to be able to do just, you know, this, that, and the other. And they continue. I mean, they got a little baby now, and their oldest just got married. So, you know, my point here is that if your heart's really there, it'll have feet to it. I firmly believe that. But I also believe that there's people that struggle because there's not much they can do. I've got a lady in the church, and her name is Pam Poling. I don't know how old they are. I'm guessing in their 70s. Pam is so crippled up with arthritis. She should have been in a wheelchair 30 years ago. Rheumatoid arthritis. Her hands are drawn in. She can't pick things up very well. She has to be helped to walk or stand or anything. I mean, she is just extremely crippled, and she lives in pain. But she said last Sunday, she says, "Pastor, did you get me that directory book? Because I need more addresses." She's praying for people. She's sending them cards, and she's calling them. She does, for one, I don't think they have two nickels to rub together for the most part. I mean, they're like most of the people in our church. It's not a wealthy church at all. And, you know, it's not a wealthy church, but at the same time, these people with very little means are willing to go above and beyond to reach out and care about people, even though they don't have the means to do much. And I just think that when we look at it, a lot of people will say, okay, I care for this group, I care for that group so much, but I want the government to do it. And quite frankly, you know, I realize that we have agencies in place that need to do these things. But let me ask a question. Does that relieve us of the personal responsibility of taking care of our brothers and sisters in the world? I don't believe that it does.
I don't think so. But I think what did happen was, no matter what your life is, like a meal, let's say a meal, the reason you cook a meal is because you're hungry, or somebody's hungry. You wouldn't have cooked the meal if nobody was hungry and you weren't hungry. What would have been the point? You're just going to throw it out. And somewhere along the line, agencies that help people got bigger, I believe, because people weren't stepping in. People weren't saying, I can help. And if you don't do it, well, then you are in trouble, because what do you do next? And it's a fascinating topic, because had there been interventions, were there interventions today, I don't believe a lot of these agencies would exist.
I would agree, and I have to go back to, it's wonderful to be in a country where we have the ability to make money, and it's wonderful to be in a country where we can be successful. But there's an interesting thing that I think happened, and it was probably post-World War II, I would say. And it began to get worse and worse as the time went on. Here's what happened. Our country began to become somewhat affluent. And I think as we became somewhat affluent, our middle class, I will say middle class, not in the sense of income, but our largest class of people, our middle class people. Even our middle class people originally never had a lot. They had to budget. They had to set their meals right. They got, you know, if someone got sick or they had to miss work, it hurt. It really hurt. If they were, we didn't have all the things to fall back on. And I think because of that, everybody was more compassionate with other people that were hurting because they knew the hurt. My mom always told me one time when she grew up on, not grew up, when I was born, we lived there for, we moved shortly after that, but I was born on South Harris Avenue in Columbus. And my older sisters and my brother went to school in that area when they were younger. And it, at that time, it was a very, very blue-collar, hardworking neighborhood that people would... people literally live pretty much paycheck to paycheck. But she told me one time, in all the places that we ever lived, that was her favorite place. And I said, why would that be? You know, because I liked some of the places we had lived. She said, because in that neighborhood, she said, everybody helped everyone, and I never felt so loved as I did in that neighborhood. And I think what happens is, as people become more affluent, they lose touch with hurt. Financially, they lose touch with poverty. And what happens is then we go into the mode where you're poor because it's your fault. And we see a lot of that. Now, I'll be honest with you. you and I both know, everyone knows, that there are some people that don't have much because they have chose to do what they do. I mean, if you get paid on Friday and you go out and hit the bar and blow half your paycheck, which a lot of people do, I've grown up. I've been out in the world as a younger person. I lived in the in those situations more, and it happens. Now, you know what? That's something you need to correct. So there's that type of. But there's a lot of people. It's kind of like in our church, we do this thing every year. It's called, we've struggled with a name for it. We've called it a Christmas giveaway, a Christmas blessing. We just have never settled on a name for it. But what we've done for many years now is we begin to collect some gently used, but over the years we've gotten more new stuff coming in. And we have a thing at Christmas time where we have people come in on a Saturday. And on that first they get to sit through a very abbreviated little Christmas message, because maybe that's something they don't get. You know, some songs, and I'll say a few words, and we'll pray. And then they are partnered with somebody, and they go through the church. There's all these tables we decorate. We have cookies and spices and spice cider. And people have a list of the age of their kids, and boy or girl, and they actually go through and shop for their Christmas. And at the end, they go into the sanctuary, and there's these wonderful ladies every year that set up tables to wrap gifts, and they wrap the gifts and tag them, and these people go home. Now, the reason I bring that up is because that particular program is geared for what I call the working poor. And there's a lot of people that don't quite meet the criteria for agencies. But I had one lady one year, she came up to me in tears, and she said, "This is so unreal." She said, "My kids are going to have Christmas." She said, "I really had to make the decision this year whether I was going to pay my rent and my utilities this month, or whether my kids were going to have Christmas." And she said, "I knew the responsible thing to do was to keep a roof over their head, and it just had my heart broken. But now they have Christmas." And see, that's what I'm getting at. You know, it's not just the people that need the agencies and go to the agencies. There are a lot of programs involved to help those people. There are some very generous people out there. But what I'm getting at is we really need to reach those people. And then, like those, when those people come in, they leave us their address and phone number, and we don't do that so we can hit them up for money. We get their address and phone number so that at a few days before Christmas, we can come to their house, they check if they want it or not, and we bring them their Christmas meal. We bring them a turkey and all the stuff to go with it, or ham, or whatever the case is. And this is the reason we do this, is because we need to be what we like to call in the church the hands and feet of Christ. It's great to talk, but are we out there doing it? It's great to, say that we need to pay for this and we need to pay for that, and there needs to be more money in this program and that program. But the truth of the matter is, if people would go back to taking personal responsibility for their neighbor. And now people are saying, "What are you talking about, Pastor? They're not my responsibility." Yeah, they are, because we're all here on earth together. And the Bible tells us to love our neighbor as ourself. It also tells us to put our neighbor first. It also tells us to forgive our neighbor 70 times 7. You know, you start following all these things. It also tells us, you know, not to forsake the poor and the widows. And it also tells us, do you know that it says that a person that does not take care of their parents, if they need it, or a family member, is worse than a non-believer? If you look at all those things, what Scripture is trying to tell us is, it's not about you. And we need to, I believe, as a community, as a country, be willing to help someone else. You know, there's the story in the Bible about the widow that gave the last of her oil. Remember that story? And when she did, her oil never ran out again. And the truth is, I believe, as we go out there in the community and we help people, it truly does come back to us. And that's not why we do it. We do it because they have a need, they have a desire. We throw so much food away in this country out of fear of lawsuits. It's unbelievable. What I mean by that is stuff that's maybe not dated, but it is. That's a whole other subject. But what I'm saying is we throw away more food, more clothing, more things in the trash. When I was I'm not giving you much time, am I, Scott?
No, that's okay.
When I was a young man, I had to be resourceful because Shirley and I had our kids like pop, 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 you know, and the kids kind of outpaced our income. And on Fridays, I worked in Upper Arlington a lot in Columbus. I did swimming pool work, in-ground pool work, construction. But anyway, my uncle at the time had an auction house in Raymond. This is going back quite a few years. And on Fridays, I would drive my truck around on that trash morning, if it was trash day or whatever day it was, and I would load my truck with stuff that was good stuff, good stuff, drive it up to the auction that night. They'd sell it, and that would be our grocery money and gas money for the week. And my point I'm trying to make is, why were they throwing that stuff away when people could use it or looking for someone that could use it? We've become such a throwaway society. And it does bother me, Scott. I'm not saying that there aren't responsibilities that we have given the government to do certain things through taxes and whatnot. But the government would have a lot more money in those areas. It would go a lot farther if people would take personal responsibility for their neighbor. Does that make sense?
Well, it certainly does, because I think that is part of the idea. And I don't think it does happen, though. I think, you know, and I forget who I was having this conversation with this week, but without mentioning the charitable organization, at one point in town, there was an organization, it was an educational organization, that I thought should go on. It was there for a long time. And their funding had been cut off because of budget cuts. But they wanted to go on. I think everybody in the city wanted them to go on, and they were asking for people to do fundraisers. They were trying to do fundraisers to keep the door open. So a fundraiser was done many years ago, and in the meantime, this charitable organization came in, not run by the government, just a charitable organization, came in and took over that place. Good, because now they're funding it. They're no longer in the area being closed. Now, the charity event we did went along, and I took the money up to the man who ran it to give it to him. He said, I can't accept that now because this group has taken over. Now, this is not a government group. This is a standalone charitable organization. You have to give them the money because we've become one of their subsidiaries. Okay. So I go to the office of that group and give them this money, and I say, this is for this. This is what we raised it in the name of. And the group said, well, we can't guarantee that it will go there. It will go to wherever it needs to go here. And I found that to be an odd conundrum, because why couldn't you? Why couldn't you? It's a private group. It's not a governmental group.
Because they could, and they just didn't.
That's right.
Their policy said no. I'll give you an example in the church. I'm not horribly excited about designated funds because the church covers all aspects of what needs done, and it's a lot easier if we are free to use the funds as and where they're needed. I'll tell you a funny story. Years ago, I was in a church. And the church was starting to have a little bit of financial issues because of some things that went on. And over here in a side fund was sitting this huge amount of money that had been given over the years for stained glass windows. Now, that church was never going to have stained glass windows because of the design of the church. It just wasn't going to happen. But this lady gave this cheap, that was her dream, and she always would give a check, and she'd write for stained glass windows. Well, the problem was, legally, It had to be there for stained glass windows. It couldn't be touched. And I don't know whatever became of that, but there was that stained glass window fund that could never be used. Now, that's what can happen with designateds. For the most part, though, the law reads that, I know in our church, if someone gives money towards the backpack program that goes into the schools, that's where it's got to go. And that's what we have to do. Something interesting, though, I do want to bring up about this whole charitable thing and the difference between when churches do it as they should be, when people do it as they should be, and when the government does it. Now, we all know what wise use of money is, right? I mean, that's getting the best bang for your buck. If the church does it, there's no administrative costs. If individually we do it, there's no administrative costs. When you get into most big charitable organizations, and when you get into the government organizations, there's huge administrative costs, which means your dollars aren't going as far. I mean, just give you an example, and I'm never knock the work they do. I don't feel they have enough personnel and staff anyway to do all the stuff they do. But if you walk into our local human services department, start counting employees and then start counting payroll and adding all that up, and you're thinking, wow. Well, the point is, if people would have done what they should have done over the years, these agencies, even if they were needed, they wouldn't be needed to the extent that they are, and they wouldn't have to be staffed to the extent they are. And if people actually just got up and went out and did, I know that one of the things that we did when I was a kid in church was we adopted families all over the place. And we took our young people, because I was one of the young kids, I remember going, we would take our young children with us because we wanted them to understand this is part of what you do. You know, God does not give you the money and take care of what you have so that you can hoard it and become a fat cat. You know, if you're blessed enough, excuse me, if you're blessed enough to have it, you better realize you need to share it. And I got to tell you, Scott, those people that I've known over the years that have lived by that rule in their life, they're happy people. They're people that can look in the mirror every morning and not have to turn away. There are people that, this may sound strange, there are people that can wear the same style clothes and never change them because they're not needing fashion to try and define who they are. They know who they are.
Well, this to me all dates back to a very interesting point. And it's dialogue and it's conversation and it's willingness to understand other people. And I think this is gone. And I don't know why it's gone. But I do know it's gone because I know now that there are more arguments, there are more disagreements, which I guess is a lower key argument. And I never hear anybody walk away saying, oh, I never thought of that way. You know, maybe I should rethink my thought on that. Doesn't happen. And, you know, I was thinking about this the other day because you had a conversation on the pastor spot on Tuesday from 6:10 until, or 5:10, excuse me, 5:10 to 6 p.m., on Tuesday, and that show will replay Sunday morning from 8:10 to 9 p.m., you and Thunderbolt Patterson and Terry Tackett, about essentially why people aren't coming to church. It's the numbers they once used to come to church. And you know what I thought about was interesting? Because I was listening to the reasons that were being given as to why they don't. And yes, I think there is a contingent of people who don't come because electronics, and I think there's a contingent of people who don't come because they have a little different mindset. But you know what's different? When I was younger and I went to church, this predates Facebook and social media.
Predates the Civil War, doesn't it?
Yeah, predates Civil War. I didn't know my preacher's political beliefs. Didn't know. Now, I might have got an inclination during a sermon, but I didn't know him. I didn't know. He didn't talk politics. But many, many, many preachers. Now, if you're their friend on Facebook, you know. You know where they are. And that's okay. But some go to varying extremes. And I think that's off-putting to a lot of people.
Yeah, I think that that's a subject for a whole other show.
What's
maybe we'll talk about that. It is interesting. I really think that a lot of I have to say this, during our conversations, you were talking about people walking away and going, I never thought of it that way. You know, I know some conversations I had with Terry on the pastor spot, and a couple in particular on my mind, of his opinions on some issues, and we've had them on here. We're all walk away, and I do ponder this stuff and think about it, because we should do that. I think pastors, you knew where they were anyway, in many cases. I always did growing up, pretty much probably knew where my pastor was. I would have been, you know, because I remember all that. I had a political mind since I was a kid, and I was always intrigued by it. So I saw that. But I think the issue isn't politics as much. It could be one. I do know of a large church one time when George W. Bush was running for president, had a political pundit come on that was a huge Bush supporter come to their church and speak, and I bet they had close to a quarter of the congregation leave the church.
Yeah.
So but what I'm getting at is I really think the biggest reason is time.
Well, it's interesting to me because what is fast? I don't think it's the fact that the preacher votes. I don't think it's the fact that the preacher has a point of view. So maybe I'm mischaracterizing that. I don't think it's that, because I knew the preacher at that time where I was going. I knew what his point of view was, and I probably could have told you who he was voting for. But what was different was I didn't see him having arguments with other people about it. I didn't see him sharing articles that sometime would go beyond what I would think. And I would think that at some point in a congregation, like you just said, I don't know any congregation, and you wouldn't know this, but where every member of the church votes the same way in every election.
Oh, of course not. So, I know that in our church, we have people on completely on both sides of the political spectrum, and there's people in our church that are completely opposite of where I am politically, and they know that I love them, and I respect their opinion, and here's the little difference in the congregation that I have versus maybe what you're familiar with. I really encourage people, if you believe something, talk about it. If you're really adamant about something, speak what you believe. Don't hide under a rock. And because of that, it causes a lot more discourse, a lot more conversation, a lot more. But see, that's my whole point, Terry, is that we can still love each other very much. One of my most loved elders in the church passed away last winter, and we were as far apart politically as you could, and it broke my heart to see him go, and I still miss him. When we have meetings, you know, I'll get that picture of him walking in the front door, and it just brings tears to my eyes. And we've all talked about how much we miss him dearly. Politically, we were, I mean, East and West, black and white, different.
Right.
But we loved each other, and that's the difference. And in my congregation, people know where I stand and what I believe, and I encourage them to do the same thing. So it's not, personally, I believe if you believe something very strongly, be honest about it.
Well, and I think in those days, those preachers did. Before social media. I'm not saying that having an opinion is wrong, voicing your opinion is wrong. I don't think it is. I think that's America, and that's what you're allowed to do. I just think in those days, it did not deteriorate into a conversation where I don't have to see you face to face. You don't have to see me.
Oh, right.
And it's Thursday night.
And
I can post a nasty thing. And that's where the problem. It's not that Facebook exists. It's not that somebody shares an opinion. It's not that at all. I'm fine with that because I do think preachers did that. But what I don't think they did was get into arguments that you didn't. And it's very hard to pick up tone on.
Boy, that's really a struggle when they start. And I, the other day, somebody asked me how I was doing on Facebook. And my comment back to them was, not on Facebook, excuse me, on text me. How are you doing? Blah, blah, blah. And I said, you do me a favor. I said, here's my phone number. Will you please call me? I don't want to have a conversation. I just don't like them. You can't get any voice inflection. You can't get any anything. And people so many times miss it. I've caught myself texting someone something and then rereading it and then having to go qualify what I just said because I said I thought from reading it would sound differently. Pick up a phone and have some personality and some person in you. You know, be personable and call somebody. But I'll tell you, I had a preacher pastor growing up. Dr. Brock, Dr. William Brock, brilliant man, good pastor, strong preacher. But my word, he was so blunt at times, and it was so blunt that he was scary blunt. But people knew where he stood and knew what he firmly believed, and he was passionate about some things. I'm very passionate about some things that really go right through me, and I may even be on the edge sometimes on a post with passion, but as far as getting into a disagreement and battling back and forth with harsh words with people, you can't do that. You shouldn't be doing it to begin with. Well, look, if you get on there, Scott, say you get on there, and you don't, but say you got on there and you posted something very, very blunt about something. Why do I need to argue with you when you just told me what your opinion was?
Well, that's it. And what brings this to mind, and what brought it to mind when I was listening to that show last Tuesday, was I recently saw a preacher in Marion, who I know very well, friends with. If I saw him, we would talk. But get into a fight with a politician in Marion on Facebook over politics. Again, nothing wrong with him being passionate and feeling what he feels, the preacher, about his point of view. But if you read the dialogue that followed, and the politician, that's their job. It was nasty. And you know what it ended with? It was fascinating, and this is an exclamation point. It ended with the preacher on Facebook, I read it, saying to the politician, why do you always post on my posts? He did not like the conversation or disagreement that followed. And I can't imagine a preacher saying that. I can't imagine.
It's kind of like if I went on, I see posts all the time where people say, you know, it'll be a Democrat-Republican comparison, and one or the other party is a complete idiot, and it'll say it, and just really disparaging remarks about either party. And could you imagine if I'm a Democrat and I've got Republicans in my congregation, and I put on Facebook that a picture of a horse's rear end and say, this is your typical Republican.
That's the difference.
And you know, you just told members of your congregation that you think they're a horse's rear end.
That's the problem. And see, it's not the opinion. The opinions are concise. And we're friends on Facebook. I've never seen you write anything that I thought was out of line. But boy, people share those pictures. Boy, people share those things that are so clearly untrue both ways. And I always think, if that was my preacher, you know, even if I like the church, even if I like that denomination, you know, I would really look at them a different way for thinking that was okay to send out. Because even if I don't like the person, I would say, boy, that was a real, real nasty thing to do. Why do that? You know, I hope your goal is to have your own opinions, but also bring people together. Well, that's
I
not
think
the way
sometimes,
to do it.
Though, in some of the posts and some of the pictures, they are big to people to make people think, you know, the reality of a situation. I know that most people probably don't realize some of the things that go on and things they think are okay. You know, it's kind of like I just don't want to get in this conversation right now about certain issues.
And we're out of time.
We're out of time. The point is, you know, sometimes I'll put I'll even post a picture that's pretty blunt. I try to make sure of what I believe is the accuracy when I do it. Not some silly poll that somebody made up that nobody knows anything about. But there are some things that are accurate statements that, you know, actually come from good places. You really got to look. I do a lot of background. Don't you do that when you try to, when you see something?
Oh, sure. You got to cross-reference
it. You got to do that. Hey, what time? How much time do we have, Scott?
We got about 30 seconds.
Oh, wow.
So the point today, I think, is if you see somebody in need, help. You know, try to be good.
Absolutely. And something else you can do. I'm a firm believer in prayer. And this Wednesday, at all your schools around, will be National See You at the Pole Day, this coming Wednesday. And that's where you come together and you pray around the pole in front of your school. Check your school times. I know at Elgin, at Elgin schools, the elementary will be at 7. Or excuse me, high school will be at 7 and elementary will be at 8:30. So if you want to come and pray, that's great. But hey, folks, put some legs to that heart.
And this program will repeat Sunday morning, 9:10 to 10 a.m., and then Tuesday evening, 6:10 until 7. The Pastor Spot with Pastor Steve Whitaker airs live every Tuesday, 5:10 to 6, replays Wednesday, 3:10 to 4, and Sunday morning, 8:10 until 9 a.m. So this Sunday, 8 to 10, pay attention. See you next week.
Tom. Thomas Lawn Service for all your lawn care and landscaping needs.